Our next presenter is Janelle Downing. She's a PhD student at UC Berkeley in Health Services and Policy Analysis. Ms. Downing previously worked with the Institute for Health Policy Studies at UCSF on cost-effectiveness research. Janelle's research interests include cost-effectiveness and reproductive health.
Hello, how's everyone's conference going? Okay, still awake? I'm Janelle. I'm coming to you from UC Berkeley. I'm a third year PhD student in health services and policy analysis. And I'm going to kind of take today to take a different approach than most of the presentations that I've done in the past that are very heavily methodologically focused and sort of take a bird's eye view of all the studies that have been done with the non-pneumatic anti-shock garment. I just want to take a moment to acknowledge that Suellen Miller and Elizabeth Butrick have been working on this project for quite a many years, and Allison, who you're going to hear from next, has been with the group for about 3 years. So I've only been involved on the cost-effectiveness side, and so if you have any specific questions about the study, we have an expert in the audience. Okay, so first, who here has heard of the non-pneumatic anti-shock garment? Wow, okay, that's great. So just a brief overview, it's a non-inflatable first aid garment recommended for use on women in hypovolemic shock secondary to obstetric hemorrhage. So as you can see in the image there, that's how it's applied. So obstetric hemorrhage affects something about 14 million women per year. And about, I want to say, 145,000 women die due to conditions secondary to obstetric hemorrhage. So what the garment does, I'm going to use garment going forward, it's a shorter, less awkward version. It directs blood basically to the vital organs and provides a temporizing measure for women to reach definitive care. And so what I mean by that is, you know, reach access to surgeries and blood transfusion or any other sort of care that they might need. And so just to double back, a majority of the deaths are due to these triage delays or transportation delays. So a lot of women are traveling in low-resource countries from their homes to at a great distance to reach primary health clinics. And then from there, a lot of them have to be transported to referral hospitals. So what the garment does is it basically keeps them alive long enough to reach care. And so I'm just going to talk briefly about the two studies that have been done, and then evidence from the effectiveness of these studies, and then evidence from cost effectiveness of these studies. And that's where I'll get more into my portion of it. So we have observational studies from Egypt and Nigeria, and a cluster randomized controlled trial in Zambia and Zimbabwe, and that's where those countries are, in case our Africa geography is poor. My New Orleans geography was really poor, so. So as you can see here, the Egypt and Nigeria trial, so in the Egypt and Nigeria trial, the intervention was comparing application of the garment at the referral hospital compared to not having the garment. And this occurred over 2004-2008, and this was in 4 referral hospitals in Nigeria and 2 in Egypt. And there was about 1,400 women. And more recently, over 2009-2012, there was a cluster randomized controlled trial. And the purpose of this study really was to test the difference or the effect of applying the garment at the primary health clinic, so earlier in the process, versus applying it late at the referral hospital. And so this occurred in 38 peri-urban primary health clinics, and these clinics reported to 5 referral hospitals. And over that time period, there was 887 women that were retained for analysis. So just briefly, and again, these papers were not ones that I personally wrote, so this is not taking credit for myself, although I'll what is the effectiveness like of this? So in Egypt and Nigeria, we see that there's a 55% reduction in odds of mortality and about 88% reduction in relative risk of severe morbidities. Meanwhile, those studies, those observational studies, really prompted this CRCT. And in Zimbabwe and Zambia, they found that there was a reduction in odds of mortality and additionally a 54% reduction in morbidities. However, as you can see here, those are not statistically significant. So the question is why? Allison can speak to more in depth about this if you're interested, but I think basically what happened was they didn't enroll as many women as was anticipated in that time period, and actually there were fewer deaths in both arms during the period, and that might have been due to just heightened awareness in all the arms of the trainers in delivering care. So the study was ended before they were able to reach statistical significance, and so unfortunately there was no real conclusion drawn here, although there was also, I believe there was a statistically significant result for reduction of shock. So, okay, we have these results. Potentially it's cost-effective at the primary health clinic. Potentially it's effective at the primary health clinic, and we found that it is effective at the referral hospital, but you know, if you're a policymaker, okay, that's great. Now, is this cost-effective? Should we apply that at our own hospital? I think a lot of people want to know that. So just briefly, what is cost-effectiveness? We're just comparing cost with health outcomes. It's a very simple equation. We're collecting the cost difference in the intervention versus the control, and then the health outcome distance difference, which is measured in disability-adjusted life years lost, which is DALYs are sort of a composite of years life lost and years life lived in disability. And so what we're measuring is the incremental cost per DALY averted. So just briefly, so cost effectiveness, you know, we talked a minute about the effectiveness portion. So what do the cost inputs actually look like? Excuse me. And so as you can see on the left, these are box plots basically of four countries' cost inputs for the primary units that we looked at. So the garment now, I believe, sells for $75. Excuse me. $75 and can get up to 72 uses. So I think that's about $1 per use now, and maybe a little bit more if you factor in cost of cleaning. So this was a significant reduction in our studies, which means that even now, potentially it could be more cost effective. The training cost per use, you know, there's some variation, again, that's dependent on the cost of the labor, the staff at the local facility. There's also some variation in the cost of oxytocin, which is used in this setting. And as you can see on the right, notice the scale is quite different. On the left, it goes from 0 to 8, and on the right, we have up to $500. So these two inputs here are interesting to me because the cost of blood varies very widely, and I believe, let's talk about the emergency hysterectomy first. The emergency hysterectomy, I believe in Egypt, costs something like $480 for emergency hysterectomy, and again, that's dependent on the cost of the time of the provider. So in more developed countries, I'm using that word very inappropriately, but it will probably have a higher emergency hysterectomy cost. Also, in these studies, we found that 97% of women in Egypt, almost all of them, were provided some sort of blood transfusion, and almost all in Nigeria. Well, only about half in Zambia were provided a blood transfusion, and only 70% in Zimbabwe. So there's evidence there that, although we can't say definitively, due to lack of perfect data, lots of missingness, but blood availability, but based on, you know, what we know about these countries, there's some issues around availability of blood. So why am I talking about blood? Why am I talking about emergency hysterectomies? So the reason is because, let me present this part first, and then I'm going to double back to that. Stay tuned. Okay, so so what we found in our cost-effectiveness analysis for Egypt and Nigeria, it was cost savings for women in Egypt from about $77 to $85 per woman. So what that means is that, you know, there was no cost, it was cost savings. So we don't report the cost per dally averted. And it was very cost effective, $3 to $6 per dally averted in Nigeria. And usually just a general rule of thumb of what is cost effective, you know. It's generally, for very cost effective, it might be one times the GDP per capita in a country, and anywhere up to three times the GDP capita for cost effective. So these are very tiny numbers. So that looked good. Those numbers were good. And then we moved on to looking at the cost effectiveness in Zimbabwe and Zambia. And due to the small number of deaths in both arms in Zimbabwe, we weren't able to make any conclusions or draw any evidence from that. But we found that in Zambia, it was very cost effective. So again, why was it cost effective? What was it doing? So basically, in part, when you're applying the garment, you're potentially saving these important resources like blood transfusion. So although we can't say this definitively, we think due to the fact the garment allows for less bleeding, then you don't have to buy as much blood, or you don't have to give as much blood, or you potentially don't have to do an emergency hysterectomy. But we're also concerned about availability, right? Because if there's nothing available at the country, you can't really say it's cost-effective because you're not really saving any resources because you don't have any resources. So it would be inappropriate for me to say that. So in short, we find that the garment is considered cost-effective at both levels. And in particular for settings that have moderate to high resource costs, so like the three countries that we discussed, this can potentially be a cost-saving mechanism for countries to adopt. That's all.